Anybody calculated, has anybody calculated how few people have actually been killed over the years by all the rockets?
Yes, that there used to be somebody. Do you remember in the Groschel, Hershey Gans or Gans? Do you remember him?
Yes, of course.
Where does he live? He lives.
He was in Baltimore. They couldn't come on Eliyahu because they both had elderly mothers who needed their care, so they didn't come on Eliyahu. Now he apparently is not well. He was here a couple of months ago. He's very serious back problems, and which limits his mobility. So I haven't seen him in, I think he's gone back to the States. I don't know.
Because
About it.
he is a statistician, and he has investigated, I think, quite extensively the incredible statistics about what Larry just asked. And yes, the facts on the ground are an incredibly small number of or minimal damage has been incurred in a miraculous fashion. Although when I was in Be'eri last week on
Oh, yes, what
Friday.
happened with that?
Yeah, well, gosh, there you could hear the explosions. What you heard on Friday night, as they say, you ain't heard nothing. It blew your ears off when you were there. It was actually quite disconcerting, but they kept on telling us, don't worry, don't worry, it's all Israeli fire, it's not Hamas fire. But you're right there, literally on the border, literally on the border. And so the Israelis were sending in, fired bombs all the time. It was every time the explosion went, I almost fell over. It was so loud. It's very, very loud. But
But in terms of
I
your
think
mission down there, though, how did that go?
it was a harrowing day, put it that way. I'm not going to say that Be'eri looks like a war zone because that's exactly what it is. But it's just blown to pieces, the whole moshav. You see the hashkocha elyona because, without any teva way of explaining, you could literally have one home, which is a beautiful home, it's a beautiful kibbutz, intact, untouched, and the house next to it has just been exploded into a trillion pieces. A mound, there's so much mounds of rubble there. Houses just blown to pieces and explosions and burnt. You can see terrible, terrible, terrible. And we were actually accompanied. There's like a group of 20 Rabbonim, including actually a Rav Davidovich was also there. And we were accompanied by one of the heads of Zaka organization, who are responsible for burial of bodies, in these types of tragedies. So you can imagine, so he accompanied us the whole day. You can imagine some of his stories that he was telling us were pretty brutal, gruesome, very difficult. The most beautiful, beautiful moment was tragic, but very beautiful. We were met by somebody from the moshav, from the kibbutz, who's not frum at all. He was not wearing a yarmulke, he had a long ponytail. And we were met in his parents' home, or what's left of it. Not much is left of it. It's blown to pieces. There's like a few walls, and there's just tons and tons of rubble. You're literally like, wading around. His father was killed on the day. His mother and sister and nieces were taken into captivity, as was his brother-in-law. So his mother, his sister and kids have been released. They were released in the first release, but his brother-in-law is still there. So he spoke very movingly. And then one of the Rabbonim actually just impromptu just went up to him, gave him a massive hug, and said, you're a pillar of strength for us. And then all the Rabbonim, 20 of us, sang together, Achenu B'nei Yisrael, and Asunim Batzar Vashivya. It was just the most surreal scene. One irreligious fellow surrounded by 20 rabbonim on a pile of rubble in what used to be his parents' dining room. And it was very, very moving that we davened and that we said a Mishiberach. And so actually, I tracked him down and I phoned him just before Shabbos. I spoke to him about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, just yesterday on Friday. And I said to him, you know, you're a hero. And we just all felt, Kulanu Achim, we're all brothers. And, you know, his father was killed because he was a Jew. And they didn't check what size his yarmulke was, or whether he was wearing a yarmulke, or what size hat, or what color shirt. Or he was killed because he was a Jew, and we're all Jews. And it was a very, very moving moment. And this fellow said in a lighter moment, but it was a very moving moment, he said, you know, I never thought I'd see the day that 20 Rabbonim would be standing in my parents' home. You know, his parents are obviously completely irreligious. And so I said to him, when I spoke to him, I said, you know, to be honest, I also didn't think I'd see the day. You know, what do I have to do with Kibbutz Be'eri? But this has brought people together. It's moved people. I actually had in my house Friday night, also very, very moving, very, very moving. We have a member of our community, South African, actually. So he told me, he's a Baal Tshuva. He's got three siblings, and they're all with him for Shabbos. So I said, you know what? Bring them over. Come over. So on Friday night after the meal, they came over. Him, his siblings, all irreligious. One came with her boyfriend, and another one's got a boyfriend. Actually, another one has been chayes b'tshuva. It's not quite true. So he's told me he spent the last three Shabboses on Gaza Beach. He's in the army. But anyway, the sisters and this boyfriend I spoke to, actually, I called him also last night. I told him how moved we were. He told me he kept Shabbos actually.
Wow.
And the sister is totally religious. She said she's kept eight Shabboses now in a row. So I said to him, I said, you know, you're unbelievable. You're unbelievable. You're very humbling. It's very humbling. You know, it's easy to talk. And we're all talking, we've got to do this, we've got to do that. And she's actually doing it, you know, to not keep Shabbos and then accept upon yourself to keep Shabbos is a tremendous Mesiras Nefesh. But the beautiful thing was, I spoke to this, you know, this boyfriend last night. He comes from the most secular kibbutz in Eretz Yisrael. And he's become sort of friendly with this girl who's a sister of a member of a kibbutz. They're talking about maybe getting engaged or married. Comes from nothing, 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 nothing. His brother-in-law told me, I said to him, does he daven, does he bench? And he laughed at me. He said, no, not because he's anti, because he's no idea what benching is. He's never heard of it. So he's got no idea what it is. But he told me last night when I spoke to him, he said, keeping Shabbos, he said it was just beautiful. It was just unbelievable. And I spoke about it when they came. Obviously, I spoke to them, spoke to my kids, spoke to them, and sort of indirectly, you know, tried to speak about the beauty of Shabbos and just being cut off from everything and just being together with Hashem. And you know, so he was there sitting in around my front table, covered in tattoos, et cetera, et cetera. But you know, again, we're all brothers. And he was a Kohen. He's a Kohen. I said, you know, we have a lot of Hakaras HaTorah. You can give us brachas. You have a koyach that we don't have. I think he was very moved. He was very moved. And after they left, I went to shul. We have a Seder Friday night. And then this member of our kehillah, who was one who brought them to us, he said, he came in the middle. He said, I just have to tell you. He said, my brother-in-law came out. He had a sparkle in his eyes. He said, it's the first Rav I've ever met in my life. And Rebbe just felt, you know, at home and comfortable and respected and loved. And then, you know, unfortunately, it takes times like these to bring us together. And then there's so much division and categorizing and labeling, and then situations like this brings us together, brings us together. So, you know, you have a row of a shul sitting next to a guy with, you know, 50 tattoos, and there's some other girl there with nose rings and earrings and don't ask what. But kulonu achim anachnu.
You know, Rebbe, I was once in the, more than once, many, many times, in the Ohel of the Lubavitcher Rebbe in Queens. I didn't live, I lived pretty close to there. And when I was being chozer b'tshuva, I used to go there all the time, not because I'm Lubavitch at all, just because he's a big tzaddik, so I went there. And there's a mikveh there, two mikvehs actually. So many times, there's a lot of Israelis that are chozer b'tshuva that go there. These guys go into the mikveh, they come out, there's tattoos all over, they're like Hasidim. And then when they go into the mikveh, you see there's tattoos all over their body. But with the clothes on, you would never know. So one time I was there and there was an old Jew there. And the guy's in there with the tattoo, whatever. And unprompted, the old Jew goes over to him, rolls up his sleeve, and shows him and says, see, I have a tattoo too on my arm. It's a little different than yours, but it's no different. I have tattoos, you have tattoos.
So yeah, it was all very moving, very harrowing, to be honest. And then afterwards, we got taken to the border where the soldiers were. It's like a whole town there of comings and goings. But then we saw, like a whole massive group of soldiers being piled up onto army jeeps and going over the border. It was very, very moving, especially as the day before we heard, 10 soldiers were killed. You see, they're literally kids. They are literally kids. They're 19-year-olds, 20-year-olds. They're kids. They're kids, and it's very moving to see them off. And you hope they're going to come back. And it was very moving just before they all stood in an enormous circle, and somebody was giving them a whole, rally, and they all screamed, "On Hashem Hoshiyana, On Hashem Hatzlichana." It was Rosh Chodesh that day. And actually, one or two of the soldiers came up to us and they said to us, "Are any of the Rabbonim Koyanim?" So we did. We had Rav Davidovich and one or two others who said, "Oh, please, can you give us a bracha? We should come back and healthy and well."
Were
It's
they
very
all religious? Were they all religious? So the soldiers were even religious?
really not. Some were, some were not.
Amazing.
Also,
Amazing thing.
you see the tremendous chesed, bless Chabad. They're everywhere. There were more donuts there, I saw there, than I've seen in all of Bet Shemesh. There were sandwiches, there were drinks. They didn't know what to do with it. There was so much food flying around there. Yeah, we spoke to some of the soldiers, and then there was a beautiful thing. They worked out that these soldiers, who obviously are all walking around with smartphones, there's no reception in Gaza for these smartphones, so they've not been able to be contacting their family. So the head of our group, he's a very, very wealthy individual. He's the one who arranged this trip. I don't know if I mentioned, I'm still part of this whole forum of Rabbonim. We used to meet once a week, so he sponsors it. So he bought 300 kosher phones because they detected that kosher phones do have reception in Gaza. And he bought them, and he wanted the Rabbonim to give the phones to the soldiers as a gift. This way you should be able to be in contact with your family. So you can imagine that was very moving. These situations bring out the best in Klal Yisrael. What can you say? It's a tragedy that it needs times like this to see it all, but I don't think I'll ever forget 20 Rabbonim singing Achenu B'nei Yisrael, and in the middle of the circle was a guy with a t-shirt and a ponytail without a couple. And in fact, on his t-shirt there was a big picture of his brother-in-law, with a slogan, bring them home.com. And this brother-in-law is still in captivity, and we hope he's alive. You have no idea.
We have this tefillah Achenu, but I never understood what Bashivya had to do with us at all.
Right. So it's all real. Every word is real. Me'afelo lo oira. They're all underground, but afelo in darkness. Every word is real. It's all very real. And when you go to this kibbutz in Be'eri, it just becomes very real. And I won't pain you with all the details, but some of the harrowing stories that this Zaka guy obviously has to deal with. Even a Zaka guy, he's been in organization 32 years, but he said on one Friday after the posterior, he was called back to the kibbutz, and he discovered the bodies of two kids and then two women driving back to Kiryat Sefer. He said he arrived, he leaves from Kiryat Sefer, arrived just, at Knesset Shabbos. He's driving back. Can you imagine with four bodies at the back of his truck to make sure they're zeicher to Kvuras Yisrael? Sorry, let me just turn off the phone. I'm sorry.
I think one of the things that we've become too accustomed to is before this, we would say, "Oh, they bombed Sderot today." Oh, okay, no, we just went like we
That's very,
tolerated it like it was like.
yeah, that's very real. And when you hear the Zaka guy saying, "I've been in this organization for 32 years, but on that Friday, I just broke down in tears." And he, on the way back, he said he called a friend, and they just stopped by the side of the road, and they sang Shabbos Zmiras together, just to be mechazek each other. And so, everybody has their breaking point, but it's very moving. It's very moving. It's very tragic, and you see. What else do we see? We saw, a kindergarten there. I mean, what a surreal scene. A kindergarten with 1,000 bullet holes in it, and rooms burnt and exploded. And whatever. It was gruesome stuff. It was, you see houses, just piles of rubble, just piles of rubble. And other houses which are partly rubble and look about to collapse any minute, so we couldn't go close to them. And yet another house is untouched. There's a shul there, a little shul there, also untouched. I mean, it was surreal. We were there 11 o'clock in the morning. There was a little bar mitzvah celebration going on in the shul there. Can you imagine? Again, I didn't take a camera. We weren't allowed to take cameras. But another scene that I can't forget. Like I said, some of the houses, some of them are intact, some of them blown to pieces, some of them exploded, burnt. There was one house which was again in a terrible, terrible state. Next to it, the house had been razed to the ground, and there was a wall that had been rebuilt. It was just the most somebody started rebuilding his home, literally amongst the ashes, amongst the rubble, amongst the pain. Somebody's rebuilt. There was a wall, bricks, and the cement and the scaffolding, and it started again. And that's Hanukkah. The Oyer mitoch ha-choshech, he started rebuilding. He started rebuilding. He's determined to build it up again. But the truth is, in the main, the kibbutz was pretty much deserted. They've all left. So a lot of them, I think, will come back, but some of them will not be able to come back. They're too traumatized. We passed another, the next door kibbutz, or two kibbutzim, is actually a Shomer Shabbos kibbutz, and their gates were closed on that Simchas Torah, and therefore they were not attacked at all, which is another incredible story. And yeah, it's whatever. It was not an easy day.
Was that Alumim?
Yes. And we passed, there's another kibbutz in near Oz. A lot of people have been taken. And when we were standing again with this fellow in Be'eri, for him it's a thousand times more real. He was literally pointing at us. Yeah, that building over there, well, he was killed, and that building, he was killed, and so he was taken hostage. And these are his neighbors, these are his friends. It's not just names or numbers for him. These are all his people. And his brother-in-law's in captivity. His mother was there, his sister, his nieces. His father was killed. Whatever, it was very real, and I spoke about it in shul Friday night, and for it to be very real is not enough. It has to be converted into something. You have to daven better as a result. You have to learn better as a result. So I think that's what we should do. That's what we've assembled for this morning. So I think we should begin straight away. We should hear Basura's Tevis. I heard there was a terrible, terrible tragedy yesterday. Three captives, if I understood correctly, were killed by Israelis. Okay, which table Surah's Tevis Amit Hashem. It'll be in the Zechus of our Limud Torah, but you know what? It'll be a Zechus of this irreligious girl who's taken on to keep eight Shabbosos in a row. It'll be the Zechus of a guy who doesn't know how to bench because he doesn't know there's such a thing called benching, but he kept Shabbos and told me last night it was the most beautiful thing he's ever had. I asked him, have you ever kept Shabbos before? He said once or twice in his life. But he kept Shabbos. He kept Shabbos. And that'll bring the Yeshua Mitzvah Hashem. Okay, so we're back to our sugya. We're running out of time, but it's important to talk about these things. Okay, so if you remember, we're in the middle of a complicated sugya. We're coming towards the end of it now. And that is, we had this machloikas. Having accepted Ne'eman Olai, Abba or Avicha, I'm going to rely on your father, my father, to be a dayan or to be an aid. So there's machlokes in the Mishnah, can you backtrack? Can you be Choyza? Between the Chachomim and Reb Meir. But there was a machlokes as to when was their machlokes actually applicable? Is it prior to the Gemara Din or after the Gemara Din? And there were different directions you could take. In theory, you could say that la'achar gemar din, once the gemar din, once the bezdin of paskan neshayla, maybe then everybody would agree that it's too late. You can't now backtrack because the bezdin have already issued their psak, and maybe the machloikas is only prior to the gemar din. There was another opinion that said the opposite. No, to the contrary. prior to the Gemara Din, everybody agrees you could be Chayza because nothing's yet happened. The Machloikas is only La'achar the Gemara Din. So a different opinion. So the question is, in the final analysis, we need to now know what is the Halacha Ulamaisa. And really, when you think about it, it's a double question. Number one, is the Machloikas before the Gemara Din or La'achar Gemara Din? That's one thing we need to establish. And the second thing we need to establish is, well, who do we paskin like? Do we paskin like the Chachamim or do we paskin like Reb Meir? So have a look at the Gemara. It's about 12 lines or so before the Mishnah. The first word on the line is La'achar. At the end of that line, the Gemara says, Sholach Lei Rav Nachman Barav Chista L'Rav Nachman Bayakiv. So Rav Nachman Barav Chista sends a message to Rav Nachman Bayakiv, and he says to him, Yilamdeinu Rabbeinu, can our Rabbi please teach us? Lifnei Gmar Din Machleikas Oy La'achar Gmar Din Machleikas. We've had a big discussion and many opinions. So what is the final psak? When is the Machloikas? Is the Gemara in Machloikas prior or post Gemara Din? Question number one. Question number two, V'halocha k'divrei mi? And who does the halocha follow? Does it follow Chachamim or does it follow Reb Meir? Says the Gemara, Sholach lei. So he sent back a message, and Rabbi said, this is the final maskona. La'achar Gemar Din Machloikas. The Machloikas is only after the Gemar Din, meaning prior to the Gemar Din, there is no Machloikas, and everybody agrees you could change your mind. There is only a discussion after the Gemar Din. Okay. If there's a discussion, what, however, is the Halacha? Says the Gemara, V'halacha kedivrei chachomim. Chachomim were the ones who said that you cannot be choyza, but it turns out that even the chachomim were only ever talking about after the Gemara Din. So once the Gemara Din has taken place, you cannot backtrack. But prior to the Gemara Din, even the chachomim would agree that you can, despite the fact that you originally said, I'm prepared to trust my father or your father, whoever it may be, but as long as there's been no Gemara Din, you can be Chayza. When the Rabbanon said in the Mishnah that you cannot be Chayza, they were only referring to after the Gemara Din, and that in fact is the Halacha Ulamaisa. Now, there is another Shaila. If you remember, and with this really we finished the Sugya, there was another very big discussion. There were actually two discussions in our Gemara. One of them we've just dealt with, La'acha Gemara Din or post Gemara Din, but there's another discussion. What exactly was the case? You remember the Gemara discussed Etein Lecha or Mochel Lecha? Are we talking about a case where I will give you the money, says the Loiva, or Mochel Lecha, says the Malva, I will forfeit the money and I will allow the money to be retained by you. So no money is actually changing hands. So we did not come to a conclusion on that discussion either. And the Gemara now also brings this to a close. Says the Gemara, Rav Ashi Omar, Hochi Sholach Lei. Rav Ashi says the following message was sent. Be'etein lecha machleikas oi. Again, what was the machleikas? We have two different possibilities. Is it be'etein lecha or is it mochel lecha? We want to know what is the machleik, what is the maskana? Number one. And number two, once again, v'halacha k'divrei mi. So 5 minutes ago, we were discussing whether the machleikas is Koidem Gemar Din or Achar Gemar Din, and who does the halacha follow? Now we need to bring the last piece in the puzzle. Are we discussing Etein Lecha or Mochel Lecha? And who does the halacha follow? So he answered back, Sholach Lei, Be'etein lecha machlekes. The machlekes is with regard to etein lecha, when money is actually transferring hands. Remember, we said it's much harder to extract money than it is to retain money. That's when there's a machlekes. That's when there's machlekes. With regard to mochel lecha, there is no machlekes, but etein lecha, there is a machlekes. And once again, v'halocha kedivrei chachamim. And the halocha is like the chachamim. Says the Gemara in conclusion, we just have enough time to finish off till the Mishnah. Basura masni hachi. Everything we just said now is what was learned in Surah. Surah is one of the great yeshivas. But in Pompadisa, masni hachi. In Pompadisa, which was another great yeshiva, they learned it slightly different and they said something else. What did they say? They said, hachi omar Rav Chanina bar Shalmia. This is what Rav Chanina bar Shalmia said. They had the following conversation reported. That there was a message sent mi bei Rav, from the yeshiva of Rav to Shmuel. Yelamdeinu Rabbeinu. Can Rebbe please teach us the following? Not is the machlekes lefnei gmar din or acha gmar din. Not are we discussing etein lecha or mochel lecha? No, they asked a new shayla. Lifnei gmar din, v'konu miyodai, my question mark. What would be the halacha lifnei gmar din? So lifnei gmar din, as we said before, is a point where all agree that you could be chayzer. However, konu miyodai. What does that mean, konu miyodai? He did a kinyan. Look at Rashi. It's the last Rashi before the Mishnah. V'konu miyodai mitchila. They did a kinyan from the outset, shaloi yachzair, committing themselves not to backtrack. Now, we need to point out something very, 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 very important. What does the word kinyan mean? Kinyan, literally translated, means transaction, koina, to buy something. Like we all know, if you buy something, you have to do a maisa kinyan. We all learn together, most of us, kiddushin. When you do kiddushin, there's a maisa kinyan. Even though over there, you're not buying, as it were, a wife. The word kinyan, albeit in its original state, means acquisition. But now, kinyan is a general term. When we sell our chametz with the Rav, we all know the Rav asks us to please lift up a handkerchief or a hat. What is that? What are we doing? A kinyan? Which kinyan? What am I buying? I'm not buying anything. To the contrary, I'm selling my chametz. The answer is the root. The principle of kinyan is actually nothing to do with buying or selling, but rather it's to do with da'as. Confirmation of my da'as. When I appoint the Rav as a shliach, I need to pick up that hat as a maisa kinyan, which means it's an enactment, a confirmation, a consolidation of my da'as. It's not merely words, but I've officially appointed you as a shliach. And this confirms that my das is 100% true. When I buy something, yes, I need das there as well. That's why I called it a kinyan. Otherwise, maybe I wasn't being serious. If I buy a cow from you, what makes it mine? If I marry a woman, etc., etc., etc. So there are hundreds of examples of kinyonim, but the aside of a kinyan is one word. Das. It's a confirmation of my das. Das for what? Whichever transaction I'm in the middle of. So if I'm trying to purchase something, then a kinyan is needed to confirm that I have proper das to buy it. And if I'm marrying somebody under the chuppah, then I need to do a kinyan to confirm that my das is absolutely serious to acquire this woman. Back to our case now. I've said that I'm happy to trust my father or your father as a dayan, And then konu miyodoi, I did a maisa kinyan. What does it mean, maisa kinyan? What am I buying? I'm not buying anything. So says Rashi, three words, mitchila, right from the beginning, shelo yachzo. I'm confirming my das that when I've told you that I'm prepared to accept my father's judgment, don't think that those are merely words. I'm hereby confirming that my das, my mindset, is absolutely so. I am genuinely going to accept the psak or the testimony of my father, and I'm not going to change my mind. That was the Gemara's Shaila. We said before that koidem gemar din, all parties agree that you could change your mind, says the Gemara. But what would be if, albeit, we're talking koidem gemar din, but konu miyado, he did a kinyan, and he committed himself to not backtracking. So look back into the Gemara. Two lines before the Mishnah, yelamdeinu rabbeinu lifnei gemar din. What's the halacha? Yes, it's lifnei gemar din, but it's v'konu miyadai. But he did a kinyan. My, what would be the halacha then? Question mark. Sholach lahu. So they sent the message back. Ein la'achar kinyan klum. After the kinyan, you're right, there's nothing to talk about. Once you took that kinyan and you officially committed and you confirmed that your das is not just verbally, but actually physically, I am not now going to backtrack. So then, even though it's koidem gemar din, but you cannot be chayzer. Why? Because you did a kinyan. In some circles, a handshake, for example, is considered a very serious kinyan. I think it's well known in the diamond trade. I have sat a number of times with Rav Davidovich on Erev Pesach when he sells the chometz to the goy, and they do five or six different types of kinyonim, including kinyon kesef. One of the kinyonim is Rav Davidovich shakes the goy's hand. Why? What is that? Is that just ceremonial? It's not ceremonial. It's a maisa, which is a confirmation of the das. This is not just verbal talk, but this is a kinyan with my absolute das. Once that happens, as the Gemara just told us, that's it. You cannot backtrack.
So what was the Gemara talking about before kinyan this whole time? They're saying
just
like
a verbal agreement between us. Yes, I'm happy to trust your father. Okay, actually, I've changed my mind. Fine, you can change your mind. But if I did a kinyan, like, for example, a documentation, once I've done a kinyan, ein la'achar kinyan.
Or if I shook your hand?
So maybe you have to know, yeah, what the maisa kinyan is. Okay, Rabbi, so we're starting now a brand new sugya, absolutely brand new sugya, fascinating sugya about who's considered posel for dayonos, for edos. Mitzvah Hashem, will begin this tomorrow, Mitzvah Hashem.